Great. So today I'm going to be giving a talk called Being with the Buddha. And it's really just trying to set the context of the whole retreat in a way. So the main aim of the talk today is really just to try and communicate more deeply my kind of personal inspiration behind the practice of being with the Buddha. Talk a bit about what that practice is for me and what that might look like within the context of the retreat. And then once we've done that, I'll introduce the text itself, the Dhammapada, particularly Sangharaksha's connection with that text, and then we'll look at the first two verses of the Dhammapada. So that's what I aim to do in the next 45 minutes or so. So as I said last night, for me, this whole practice of being with the Buddha definitely was a culmination of this 3-month ordination retreat that I was just starting this time 2 years ago. So when I was preparing for that retreat and packing, I followed on a few intuitions. So one intuition was that I should take a pair of robes with me. So when the women go to Akashavana on their ordination retreat, they all wear blue, and that's just to simplify what they do. They don't necessarily wear robes, but I had this strong sense that I didn't know, maybe I would want to wear robes and maybe I wouldn't. Anyway, so a friend of mine, I asked her if I could borrow her robes, and I took them with her. So it was one intuition that I had when I was packing. And the other intuition arose on the day that I was leaving. So I was all ready and my rucksack was in the hall and I was meditating up in the shrine room with the community here at Taraloka. And I had a strong intuition during my meditation that I needed to take a copy of the Dhammapada with me. I didn't know why, but I needed to take a copy with me. So I came over to the bookshop here and I bought this copy. And it went in my rucksack and it went with me over to Akashavana. And within a few days actually of being there, I just got this very strong sense that of the Buddha, of Shakyamuni, and being in a realm with him, and wanting to be in the robes, and also to start learning this text by heart. So we'd been studying the Dhammapada together in the community, probably just a few months before I went off to Akashavana. And I like the text. And in the introduction to this text, you get Bhante's story of his connection with the text. And he talks about learning the text by heart in the original Pali as he walks down the roads of India. And I think I was just quite touched by that or something. And I had this strong sense of, oh yeah, I want to do that. I didn't go for the Pali. I thought the English was probably going to be more helpful to me. So I started learning the text by heart when I was up there. So, every morning I would wake up and make a cup of tea and I would sit in bed and learn a few verses of the text. And then during the day, in the free time between meditations and study, I'd find a rock to sit on or walk up and down the tracks, learning more of the verses by heart. And then in the evenings, I developed this ritual where after we finish our final sit or evening activity, I would recite in my head all the verses I'd learnt so far by just in my mind. Or if there was no one in the shrine room, then often I would say them out loud. So that was a practice I did every day for 3 months. And over the 3 month retreat, I learnt about half of the text by heart. And it was just, it brought a lot of pleasure to my days. I went to bed happy and I woke up happy. And I think that was because I was putting this text into my mind so strongly. And it very much felt like my esoteric retreat within the retreat. I was having the secret retreat with the Dhammapada as well as my ordination retreat and all the other things that we were doing. And then halfway through the retreat, I was ordained. I became Singamati, she whose mind is like a lion. So the lion bit refers to the Buddha, refers to Shakyamuni, and it refers to his lion's roar, him being a lion and roaring the roar of the Dharma into the world. So I found that quite ironic. There I was learning by heart and learning to speak the Dharma by heart, and there I had been given a name completely unknown to me, of course, at that before I got it, that kind of reflected that back to me, that reflected the Buddha back to me, and this desire to speak the Dharma back to me. I think Parami saw it in me before I saw it in myself. I still think she sees it more clearly than I see it sometimes. So it just felt like a real culmination for me. Then we had this whole period after where I'd been ordained, where I could really just learn to go deeper in that confidence of being with the Buddha, being in the robes, feeling this very strong sense of discipleship, actually, all the way back to the Buddha. Like, I could have been a disciple in the time of the Buddha, as far as I was concerned. In a way, we're still listening to his words and we're still practicing his teachings. You know, the meditations we do come straight from the word of the Buddha. You know, the teachings that we hear often come straight from the word of the Buddha. And so we can open, I felt myself just really opening to this experience of having a real confidence in myself as a daughter of the Buddha. Yeah. And that I could have that experience through something like this text and really just immersing myself in that. Yeah, so it really was a time of immersing myself when I was walking around, when I was in meditation, just really immersing myself in this text and getting the sense of just really trying to be with the Buddha through this text. And Sangharakshita says in one of his aphorisms, he says, "The Dhammapada is the literal truth, and it deserves to be engraved in our hearts in letters of gold." And I felt like that's what I was doing in a way. I was engraving the text on my heart in letters of gold. And, you know, faith literally means to place one's heart upon. So there I was placing my heart upon this text, yeah, engraving it on my heart. And, you know, faith is just a real confidence. That's what it means, yeah, a real confidence in what we place our heart upon and in our connection. So for me, I found my way in to connecting with the Buddha through this text, yeah, through allowed myself to really develop a confidence in my connection as a daughter of the Buddha through this text, yeah. And so in a way, that's what I'm really trying to communicate and share with you this week, this kind of inspiration and practice that I have of really trying to be with the Buddha through this text. So that's what we're gonna try and do. So Sangharakshita has, in the last couple of years, has been re-emphasizing the importance of Shakyamuni Buddha as a central focus for our devotion and practice. And that's because it's through Shakyamuni Buddha that we know of enlightenment. And so Sangharakshita's been urging us to really go for refuge to the Buddha Shakyamuni as both our teacher and as an embodiment of the ideal, as an embodiment of awakening. So we can seek a relationship with Shakyamuni in lots of different ways, yeah. So we're trying to connect with the Buddha, yeah, as our central focus of devotion and practice, because it's through him that we know enlightenment, and we can do that in different ways. So it's said that we can seek the Buddha through history, through imagination, and through reality. So we can seek the Buddha through history. And when we're seeking him through history, we're immersing ourselves in his life story, or in his teaching, or in stories of his person. Yeah, so that's the history. We can really immerse ourselves. So we can seek the Buddha through history. We can be with him in that way. We can seek the Buddha through our imagination. Yeah, we can develop an imaginative connection with his life and his teaching, as well as his image. So we can spend time reflecting on his image, him sat in meditation or him walking the landscapes of India, his goldenness, his compassionate smile, his mudras. So we can spend time with the image, connecting with him imaginatively in that way. And we can also connect with him imaginatively in terms of the stories that he told and the way that he was with his disciples. And then we can seek the Buddha as well through reality. So we seek the Buddha through reality when we realize his teachings for ourselves in our own experience. So when we start to see things as they really are, in the way that the Buddha saw things as they really are, then we meet the Buddha in reality, because the Buddha saw reality, the Buddha was reality. And when we see that for ourselves, we meet the Buddha in that way. So you get this famous quote, which is, "One who sees the Dharma sees the Buddha." So when we see the Dharma, when we see things as they really are, then we meet the Buddha through reality. So on the retreat, we're really going to try and seek the Buddha in all these ways, and try to be with the Buddha in all these ways. So we will be seeking the Buddha through reflecting on his life, as particularly in the days leading up to his enlightenment. We'll be doing that in the evenings. We'll be studying and hearing the teachings of the Dhammapada in the mornings. And we'll be seeking the Buddha through devotional practice in the afternoons. So, yeah, we'll be seeking the Buddha in all those ways. And we can also try to cultivate this sense of being with the Buddha in meditation. So, especially in the shrine room, we're sat in this beautiful circle with the Buddha in our circle, in our midst. And I can just find it very helpful just to open to this sense of, well, imagination in a way, of us being a community of disciples sat with the Buddha. Maybe we're in a forest, or maybe we're in the Taralekha shrine room, wherever your imagination wants to put you with the Buddha, with all of us. So just using your imagination when we're in that space to really cultivate a sense of being together with the Buddha, practicing with the Buddha in the way that the monks and nuns would have done, or the lay people would have done, all those thousands and thousands of years ago, yeah? So using our imagination to do that. And we can also be with the Buddha in meditation through using the text. When we start getting more into the Dhammapada and the verses, we can use some of that teaching to guide us in meditation as well. And I'll say more about that when we get there. So in a way, all the time we're just trying to develop this attitude of being with the Buddha. And that's a confidence that the Buddha is your teacher. So in a way, just try to open to letting the Buddha teach you. So in all the teachings that we're hearing, or the life stories that we're hearing, or the devotion that we're doing, all the time just trying to use that as a way in to cultivate a sense of that lineage all the way back to the Buddha, to you right here and now. So in the Tiratnavantana, in the Buddhavantana, the Buddha is described as the teacher of gods and men, the guide unsurpassed. And particularly this phrase, the guide unsurpassed, I really love, actually. And you can use these phrases as a way of reflecting on the Buddha and the Buddha's qualities. And for me, these two particularly stand out. And again, there can be things you could just drop in to your experience when you're thinking or reflecting on the Buddha, inside or outside of meditation. Just like, ah, the Buddha, the teacher of gods and men, the teacher of you. So how does that feel? How does that feel to let in this sense of the Buddha as your teacher? So in the Dhammapada, the Buddha says, "For him who is of a reverential disposition, four things constantly increase: life, beauty, happiness, and strength." And I particularly like this verse. I think it's quite unusual. It's not like some of the other verses in the Dhammapada. It's quite direct. And it's really the Buddha just saying, oh, if you can cultivate this sense of a reverential disposition, then life is going to be very much going to be full of beauty, happiness and strength. I don't know about you, but that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a life that's full of beauty, happiness and strength. So to do that, I need to cultivate a reverential disposition. And even the Buddha himself needed to cultivate a reverential disposition. So he, obviously in his time, was the only enlightened being. So there wasn't another person that he could look up to and revere. So we've probably got lots of people that we can look up to and revere. You know, people that are a bit further along on the path to the Buddha. You know, we've got a whole realm of people that we can look up to and revere. But the Buddha didn't have another person, but he still wanted something to revere because this reverential disposition is just so important. So he decided, what would he develop reverence for? He'd develop reverence towards the Dharma, towards the truth. So that's it. He cultivated reverence towards the Dharma. Yeah, so we're really looking just to develop this attitude of reverence. Well, to the Buddha and to life, actually. To life itself, to each other, to the food we're eating, to the ground we're walking on. Everything in life, actually, just trying to really cultivate this reverential attitude. In a way, it's a grateful attitude, isn't it? It's an attitude of real gratitude, for our lives and for everything in our lives. And this sense of reverence of looking up to the Buddha. And Sangharaksha says that the central problem in the spiritual life is defined emotional equivalence to our intellectual understandings. So, like we heard those verses, the first two verses of the Dharmapada this morning, and they're quite straightforward, aren't they, in some ways? Experiences are led by mind, produced by mind, and preceded by mind. So we can have an intellectual understanding of something, but where's the emotional equivalent? So in a way, the emotional equivalent is us really knowing that very deeply in our being, or really believing that, allowing ourselves to really believe that. And it's the same, we can think of the Buddha and think, oh, yeah, I believe what he taught, I have a lot of respect for him, I know his, about his life. And we can come at that in a very kind of intellectual way of feeling grateful and respectful towards the Buddha, which is great. But it's taking it that one step further in a way, in allowing ourselves to really open up, or as Satchidananda said, come out of the closet and really develop our kind of, allow ourselves to really develop an emotional connection with the Buddha, and let that flow. And I think this doesn't necessarily have to be a big experience. So I think for years I walked around feeling like, oh, well, I'm not sure if I have faith in any in the Buddha. What does that mean to have faith in the Buddha? And I think I can still feel like that sometimes. I can kind of question my connection with the Buddha. And I think that's because I'm looking for this really big, strong experience. And it doesn't always look like that. Actually, I think more often when I'm feeling in contact with my connection with the Buddha, it's more like it's out of the corner of my eye. It's something, it's more subtle than that. It's a sense of presence or a sense of, yeah, kind of more intuitive connection. And I had this sense when I was on solitary earlier this year that, in a way, that connection's so implicit in me, I almost can't see it. It's too close in. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes I have to get the wide-angle lens out to step back and see it. So I think it's quite subtle and implicit and gentle, actually, this connection. it's in a way, it's a connection with ourselves, a connection with life itself. When we're in that open, connected place, then the Buddha's automatically with us, or something. Yeah, I think it's just quite a relaxed confidence. It's quite straightforward in a way. It's quite a straightforward confidence that the Buddha is your teacher, and that the Buddha is present to us, and that we are part of a lineage of practitioners all the way from the time of the Buddha. Yeah, so the whole week, both in our formal activities together and outside of those activities, just really try to open up to developing this attitude of being with the Buddha. You know, yeah, and that really doesn't have to just be in the formal sessions. So actually, what does it feel like just to go for a walk with the Buddha? You know, so you're walking around in the grounds. Could you imagine the Buddha would have walked on the earth just as you're walking on the earth? You know, what would it have been like? What can you use your imagination just to get a sense of walking with him? Or when you're working and or eating or washing up, can you get a sense of just being with the Buddha in the, all those activities? And of course, outside of the sessions as well, just, you know, really using the time wisely in a way. It's a precious opportunity just to kind of go deeper with the verses yourself. So you might want to try learning some of them by heart, if there's one or two that grab you, or maybe more. I'll leave that up to you. But the advantage of learning them by heart, or a few of them by heart, is that you've got them with you then when you're walking around outside, or when you're in meditation and your mind's very, very distracted. You can just use the text to drop them in, to come back as a touchstone. You can give your mind something else to think about instead of what you're going to do after the retreat. You can think about the text. So if you can learn a few by heart, you know, you really can then use them in that way. So you can reflect on the verses either quite slowly, just by dropping one in and going for a walk with just one verse, thinking it through, thinking it aloud. Or you can use it more like a mantra. You can just use one verse and use it like a mantra in your mind. And outside of the sessions, you can also, you've got this opportunity with Kama City to be kind of more artistically and creatively exploring or expressing or connecting with those texts through artistic media. So that could be another way in for some of you, just to develop more of a connection with those favourite texts or verses. And the other thing you could do is build a little shrine somewhere. So at the back of the shrine room, Ginny's put a few rupees. And if you felt inclined, you could build a little shrine in a corner of a room somewhere, or anywhere you like, really. And if you need any materials for that, then do just ask Ginny. And again, it's, you don't have to. There's really no pressure to do anything like that. But just in a way, just see where your energies go, and maybe just experiment with developing that emotional connection. What would it be like to build a little shrine for the Buddha somewhere that you could tend for the week? And when you, if you're writing out the verses, you know, putting them up around the place, so you're sharing them with people. So in a way, we're just kind of creating a realm together where we can be with the Buddha. So the Buddha talked about three levels of wisdom. He talked about the Sutra Maya Pranya, the wisdom that you read or hear about, the Chinta Maya Pranya, the wisdom cultivated through reflection, and the Bhavna Maya Pranya, the wisdom cultivated in meditation through contemplation. So in a way, what we're trying to do is move through those levels of wisdom. So we'll be hearing the texts, hearing the teachings, and then we'll be reflecting on them, so developing the second level of wisdom. We'll be reflecting on them, hopefully in our own practice as we're walking around or being in the retreat centre. We'll be reflecting on them collectively during our study groups. And in a way, in this the wisdom cultivated through reflection, what we're trying to do is develop a reflective acceptance of the teachings. So we're really exploring, do these teachings actually make sense? So we're really thinking them through. So the Buddha said, having heard the Dharma, he memorizes it, examines it, examines the meaning of the teaching he has memorized, and when he examines the meaning, he gains a reflective acceptance of those teachings. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to hear the Dharma and then examine it, really think it through to develop a reflective acceptance of the teaching. And once we've thought something through and we've developed that reflective acceptance, then we can try and develop the wisdom that cultivated in meditation through contemplation, which is very different from thinking. In contemplation practice, you simply hold the Dharma truth in your mind and just allow it to percolate through your being. You're trying to move beyond reason to a direct experience of that truth, to a direct experience of the way things really are. So that's the opportunity we have available to us, is moving through all those levels of wisdom using this text. So the Dhammapada, it's a real classic in world literature. It was first translated into Latin in 1855, and it's been translated many, many times since, probably the most famous Buddhist text, I would imagine. And Sangharakshita translated the Dhammapada, and this translation was published in 2000. So the Dhammapada contains 423 verses, divided into 26 chapters. So Dharma in this context literally means truth, and pada literally is translated as footfalls, but it's often applied, used its applied meaning as verses. So Dhammapada is often translated as the way of truth or verses of truth, but it could also literally be translated as the footfalls of truth, which I quite like, actually. I suppose because, as I was saying, I connect to this sense of walking in the footsteps of the Buddha. So in a way, through this text, it is the footfalls of truth, so we can walk with it to truth. So the Dhammapada is part of the Pali Canon. It was written down in the 1st century BCE. And it's part of the Sutta Pitaka, and it's part of a collection in the Sutta Pitaka called the Little Collection. And it's apparently, I don't know quite where I read this recently, but I read somewhere someone saying that they thought it was, Sangharakshita said it was one of his favourite texts. And I can definitely believe that. I remember the first time when I went to see Sangharakshita, he quoted the Dhammapada at me quite a few times in that meeting. And in the preface to his translation here, he says that for me, it has been, the Dhammapada has been a source of inspiration, encouragement and guidance for well over 50 years. Indeed, I sometimes think that the Dhammapada contains, at least in principle, as much of the Buddha's teaching as most of us really need to know in order to progress towards enlightenment. In fact, he said this a few times, actually, that he thinks that the Dhammapada is all we need to know to progress towards enlightenment. In his paper, What is the Western Buddhist Order?, where he was doing a question and answer with some of his senior disciples in the order in 2009, one of the order members asked him whether whether you needed detailed guidance from a teacher in order to gain insight. And Sankaracharya said, in reality, all you need is a few lines from the Dhammapada. So it really is a potent text. And the Buddha said it himself, in a way. The Buddha said, better than 1,000 meaningless verses collected together is one meaningful line of verse, on hearing which one becomes tranquil. Yeah? So I think personally I can just find this a real relief, because the Buddha's teachings are vast, aren't they? I don't know if you've noticed that. And that can feel quite overwhelming. And the Buddha's teachings are vast because the Buddha taught to everyone that he met in the way that that person right in front of him, right there, needed at that moment. So his teaching was by nature a personal invitation. It was a real, it was personally given. And then since the Buddha's time, there's been lots of really helpful Buddhist teachings that have emerged since. So the Buddhist teaching available to us now in the West are vast. And for me, I think it can just be really helpful to remember, all I need to progress is a few lines of the Dhammapada. That's all I need to progress and to gain insight, actually, is a few lines from the Dhammapada. And it can be a challenging text, yeah. Some of the content, as you might have discovered already, is quite direct. And if you're finding it challenging, it can just be helpful to remember the context in which the Dhammapada was taught. So it was the Buddha teaching probably to monastics, probably to monks and nuns, and he was teaching them really to take them to enlightenment. That was what he was doing. So he was teaching people who'd probably already gone forth from the homeless life, yeah, into the homeless life. So they'd already gone forth in that way. And he was trying to teach them and guide them towards enlightenment. So it's in a very different context to here and now. So if you find some of the verses challenging, just try and remember that context and remember the way that the context it was being taught. So the Dhammapada, it really is a way for us to progress towards enlightenment and insight, and to be with the Buddha through the text, yeah, to meet the Buddha's teaching through the text. And it's also, because we're looking at Sankaracharya's translation, it's also a way that we can meet Sankaracharya. Yeah? So through looking at his translation, we can really get a sense of him through this text. And that was my experience very strongly up at Akashavana when I was learning this text and reciting it by heart. It was like I had this strong sense of the Buddha's teaching coming through Bante to me. Yeah, so I think it is it's a way that we can cultivate an emotional connection both with the Buddha and with Sankaracharya. And this text has been really important to Sankaracharya. He brought his first copy of the Dhammapada in 1944 when he was in Delhi, and he'd already decided he was a Buddhist. But he went to his first Buddhist temple in Delhi, and he bought what he fondly describes as the orange-covered pocket volume. And that pocket volume accompanied him through his many travels around Asia and then back to India, and for his many years as a wandering ascetic in India. And it was during those years as a wandering ascetic where he learnt in Pali all of the Dhammapada by heart. And then when he was studying after his ordination with his first teacher, Jagdish Kashyap, in Benares in India, he was studying Pali and Abhidharma and logic, and they studied the Dhammapada together. And it was in that period that Sankaracharya gained enough knowledge of the Pali to do this translation of the Dhammapada. So, it really has been an important text to Sankaracharya, our teacher in the Theravada Buddhist community. So, yeah, it's really a way that we can develop a connection with Sankaracharya and with the Buddha. And in the way that Sankaracharya did, we can carry it around with us and learn it by heart and engrave its truth on our hearts. That's the opportunity available to you should you take it. Yeah. Okay, so let's look at these first two verses of the Dhammapada. So experiences are preceded by mind, led by mind, and produced by mind. If one speaks or acts with an impure mind, suffering follows, even as the cartwheel follows the hoof of the ox. Experiences are preceded by mind, led by mind, and produced by mind. If one speaks or acts with a pure mind, happiness follows, like a shadow that never departs. So this is how the Dhammapada begins. And in a way, it's also how Buddha's teaching begins. Yes, yeah, so the Buddha is telling us that experiences are preceded by mind, led by mind, and produced by mind. So he's saying it's our own mind that creates our experience. Yeah. And he's saying that if we have an impure mind, then this will lead to suffering. And if we have a pure mind, that this will lead to happiness. So in this context, an impure mind, we're talking about an unskillful mind here. So in a Buddhist context, impure, it relates to unskillful. It relates to mental states of greed, hatred, delusion, fear, lust, anxiety, ignorance. You can add your own favourites to that list later. And a pure mind is skillful, yeah? So it's relating to skillful mental states of contentment, clarity, loving kindness, brightness, generosity, concentration. Yeah, so this is, you know, it's quite significant that this is how the Dhammapada starts, and the Buddha teaching us that experiences are led by mind. And if we're acting with an impure mind, that will lead to suffering. If we're acting with a pure mind, that will lead to happiness. And yeah, this is just very fundamental in the Buddha's teaching, the centrality of mind and the way that mind creates experience. And I was reflecting on it this morning in my walk after breakfast, having heard the verses this morning in meditation. I was just turning these verses over in my mind. And I think what I thought was, oh, if I really believe this, if I really believe that my experiences are led by mind produced by mind, then I really need to, and that conditions my happiness or unhappiness, then I really need to take responsibility for my own mental states. That my experience, so whether I'm happy or in suffering, is my own responsibility, because it is what I'm doing with my mind that is conditioning that. And I thought, well, do I do that? You know, to what extent am I aware of my mind? And to what extent, what am I doing with my mind? Where do I let my mind go? What do I let it think about? So you get this image of the mind as a river. And if you want a river that's pure and brilliant and beautiful, then we need to put clean water into it. You can imagine clean, perfumed spring water or something straight from the source. And then you can bring to mind an image of a river that's full of oil and pollution and gunk. And then you can think about your mind and think, what do I put into the river of my mind? And is it beautiful and clear, fresh, flowing spring water? Or are there big lumps of gloopy pollution floating about in it? So what are you putting into your mind? What am I putting into my mind? And in a way, the retreat's a really precious opportunity to watch your mind, isn't it? We're in silence more, we're meditating more, we're naturally going to be more aware of what our mind's doing. So what are you thinking about? What are you putting into your mind? What are you reading or thinking about or talking about? So what are you putting into your mind? And what's the experience that's arising out of that? So in a way, we've got the opportunity on this retreat to test out the Buddha's teaching. So if you're acting with more pure mind, does that lead to happiness? If you're acting in more impure states of mind, does that lead to suffering? Is this true? So we've got an opportunity really just to observe whether this is true or not. And the retreat is also an opportunity to clean up our minds a little bit. Yeah, so to clean up the river of our minds a little bit. So in a way, we can pour in purer mental states during the retreat. We can perfume the mind and the river with the Dharma. We can contemplate the Buddha's teaching. We can cultivate integration and concentration and positive emotion in meditation and allow that into our minds. We can open to a reverential attitude of the Buddha through his teaching, through the life stories. We can allow that to perfume our minds, and we can allow the devotion in our hearts, our heart mind, to perfume our minds as well. So we've got a real opportunity this retreat just to try and open to purer states of mind, and hopefully see if that's conducive to happiness in our lives. Yeah, so the retreat really is a precious opportunity to meet the Buddha and be with the Buddha, to really develop confidence and faith that you are connected to the Buddha, that you are a disciple of the Buddha, and that he is your teacher. And that can be quite a straightforward realization. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be someone special to let the Buddha teach you. The Buddha will teaches everybody. They just have to be open to hearing his teaching. So open yourself to hearing his teaching. And really try and open to cultivating this referential disposition to the Buddha. Really allowing through all the activities of the day to try and have an emotional connection with the Buddha through it. Yeah. So instead of just thinking about studying the Dharma, think about listening to the Buddha's teaching. Yeah. So developing an emotional connection through what we're doing. Yeah, and we can do that inside and outside of formal practice. Yeah, so the retreat just is a very precious opportunity to be with the Buddha, as our life is a really precious opportunity to be with the Buddha in all these different ways.